Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This history and current events program, from a cultural perspective, we find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom." And with all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things being put in the marketplace all the time. African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:08 here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're on our Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. And we have a special guest that will be joining us right after the commercial break. Activist, educator, and director of Freedom Home Academy International, Brother Marcus Klein, will be joining us in conversation. And we will get right back to our special guest and to start the program after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Right now, I'm really like overly excited. Brother Marcus Klein, if I was able to be a teacher or one to be able to work with around and developing what I consider our natural resource, our young scholars, I would really love to have been able to work or be able to work in that institution based off of what I see. He and others are doing it with those young scholars. So I'm really excited to have this conversation.
And it's a conversation that needs to be had, and especially now. Sometimes circumstances drive our people to do what we should have been doing all along, but this is an excellent opportunity for us to do some of the things that Brother Klein has been doing for quite a while. I've reached out to Brother Klein to get him on a couple of occasions, but somehow the wires got crossed and we wasn't able to do it. And then I wanted to touch base with him when he was here for the Locks Conference, and I didn't get to do that. But I'm glad I got him on this evening. I think this is him here, activist, educator, and director of Freedom Home Academy International, Brother Marcus Klein. How are you, sir?
I'm great, brother.
I'm glad to have you with us here on Time for Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
Man, first off, I want to appreciate, man, those revolutionary kind words Brother Rich gave me and yourself. You know, I just want to say gratitude and Uhuru, meaning freedom in Kiswahili. And, man, we got a lot of work to do. Also, I want to say, you know, we had the passing of the sister last week.
Yes, yes.
I definitely want to put that out there on how appreciative I am of her and her work. She used to call me up every now and then and check on me, because just like you, you know, you've been trying to get me on the show for a while. Sometimes I drop the ball because I got so many balls in the air.
I know it.
So every now and then she'd reach out and ask and see how I'm doing. So, man, I love that sister, man. She's always been a kind word for me, and always had nothing but positive things to say about the school. And I really appreciate her. She's an ancestor now. We definitely going to call on her when we meet. Yep.
Yes, sir. Mama Koso's work will continue. The last conference with her daughter and her husband is still here.
Yep.
And I'm quite sure that
That's
work
right.
is going to continue.
That's right. Yep.
Brother Marcus, before we start talking about the academy and the work you've done with our young people, just in case some of our audience that's not familiar, because, you know, we got folks that listen from all over. Let's talk a little bit about yourself. you're coming up. What got you? Now, I don't want to necessarily know what made you do what you're doing now. It's clear that the children, the need among our young people made you do what you're doing now. But talk about what made you kind of become active and activist. See, this is what's needed in our community now. A lot of our people, they know the issues. They know the some of our people know the problems, and they can express them. But it's sometimes difficult for our people to get motivated and get moving. Tell our listening audience what made you do what you're doing now.
Okay. Well, you know, it's an interesting story. Came out of Rutgers in 92, came to Chicago. I'm really from Detroit. So, you know, I was that crucible in Detroit is something different. So that fire, you know, kind of raised in me. I didn't become conscious. So I went to New York in the 90s, met my wife in 93. And my first date, I took one with a Steve Coakley lecture.
Uh-oh.
Told me, So 93, Kennedy King College, I decided, watching his brother Steve Coakley, I was going to do a magazine. So I published a magazine out of Chicago from 94 up until we opened the school to 2008. It was called Frontline Magazine. So on the way, my so-called conscious activity, it was drawn out through my participation in community activism. Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. was a comrade of mine. And, you know, I learned a lot from him coming up during those 90s. And early 2000s, becoming part of the community. So pragmatism, learning how to create significant programs where our people can see it being done, and then from seeing it, then they can start acting on it, became very, very important, almost imperative to me. I didn't really get into the cliques in Chicago, fortunately, because I'm not from here. So I was able to, you know, look at things a little differently. So I didn't get engulfed in that. I was kind of like, you know, more concerned with building. So the school was created in 2008, along with my wife. My wife was actually the impetus for creating the school, because I never thought I would be teaching children, just my son. He had a son in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that creating a school for him would be the most important thing that I would do. Again, teaching children was not... definitely not in my cards, brother, at least. So 2007, opened the school up in our basement. My wife and I, we had, you know, two children, my son and my godson. We built from there. By the winter of 2008, when we started, by the summer, we had 35 children.
Mm.
So the program's still in its own, and it still does. You know, it's replicable, and it's not rigid. It has a lot of fluidity in it. So it can be replicated and created in different market areas. So from 2008, 2010, we started a second school. We're on six schools now. But I brought up Coakley because not only was he my mentor for a little over 4 years, taught me how to research, do critical analysis. Those skills I use today when creating curriculums and lesson plans, you know, those same skills I use. And I think it's important that the young people see activity, like you mentioned before. It's something that's halting us and almost debilitating us from creation and implementation, because we like to read, but taking it to that next level is a challenge. Mm-hmm. And it's some different elements that that assist in that devolution, you know what I'm saying? But I think, you know, once the people start seeing things being built, they'll replicate it, as opposed to, you know, just reading and being able to regurgitate information. So, you know, Black Panther Party learning about the Black Panther Party was very instrumental in my development, seeing the programs and some of the residuals of the programs that they created. You know, and all those things, it was a nice mixing pot of different elements that came into, you know, who I am today. Brother Deke out of Philly, helped me out a lot. Of course, Brother Dale Jones, you know, Rest in Freedom. You know, those people during the 90s, they helped my development with the development of the magazine Frontline before. So the school and parents coming to me and dropping their children off with me, it wasn't that much of a stretch, because I, you know, pretty much came out of the community organically, you know.
Okay. Looking at the website, Brother Marcus, the Freedom Home Academy, it's two things that jump out. Well, several things that jump out. We're going to span the gamut tonight. But I'm looking at the Building Advocate Children and the four principles there. And I want you to kind of do a thumbnail sketch on all four. You got to be exceptional, to be driven, to be academically intense, and disciplined human beings. Talk about that in relation to our children.
So let's start with the last first.
Okay.
So becoming disciplined. How do we build, incubate, and nurture a disciplined child? First, you need structure, right? So with structure, you need a plan. So when we bring children into the school, for instance, first you need to know what's going on at the house, in the home. Right. So when we figure out what is the atmosphere at home, then we start to develop a system where that child can grow at home with that type of environment that's going to build a disciplined child. Right. So how can you be great? Well, great. Well, one of the elders told me once you're great, you're dead. So history and our legacy defines our greatness. So you can't be great until, you know, you pass on. That's one of the elders told me. I kind of disagree. I think we can be great while we're alive, but building greatness comes from the desire of wanting to do positive things for us and the community, period. Brother Baruti, he always says that freedom comes at a cost, right? So that cost is built through the development of children, discipline, the love of others, and the respect of the ancestors. So having an African-centered school, the hallmark of our African-centered school is discipline, self-development, knowledge of self, and being excellent. How do you be excellent? You can't be excellent without discipline, and you can't be excellent without knowledge of self. So building on top of those major principles, very important to the school, very important to our development, and also very important to the community. Because remember, these children will come out of our system and be part of the collective. So we have to always understand that. What Brother Amos Wilson, he always says that what you teach a child will reverberate for the next seven generations. So whatever you tell a child, you are great, young warrior. You're going to do positive things for the community. You're going to be great. Those things will reverberate. I always give the example, too. My grandmother, you know, cooking greens, right? So I'm sitting next to her. She cooking greens. She let me sip out the pot. That's called pot liquor, right? So 15, 20 years down the road, I got my son. My son's sitting next to me. I let him sip out of the pot of green with that same pot liquor. So we know that we do things even naturally because it's engraved in our DNA. So what if instead of telling the child that he's stupid, you're going to be just like your damn daddy. You ain't nothing. What if we said, you're going to be great, young warrior? What if we constantly injected that child with positive reinforcement? Although discipline and love is a counterbalance. Discipline sometimes is rough because all the children don't look at me and say, ooh, I love my marbles at school because I can be very hard. Because oftentimes, it's no father in the house. So it's a thin line that I have to walk on between showing little brother love every day and being a rider on him. I got to make sure he had his homework. I got to make sure he did his chores at home because his mother called me at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. So those things that men, they need to see at the school, out of 17 instructors, 10 of them are men, strong men. So we have to always be cognizant of a couple things, of course, you know, things that we say to children and the things that we do, because they look at us and they want to replicate. So those principles, they're not avoidable. You know what I'm saying? We have to deal with those on a daily basis, which is sometimes challenging. You know, I'm a fish eater, so the children, we can't eat meat at the school. So some of the children, they check me. Bob Mars, why you say we can't eat fish and you eat fish? You know what I'm saying? So those things, I mean, that's on a small level, but the children will always identify contradictions in an adult's life, especially when I'm around them 6-7 hours a day. So yeah, but I'm glad you picked out those principles, because those principles they can be built upon and they can be nurtured. They don't always come in with them, and some of the children, they have no idea what those principles are. Like, I don't even know what that is. But when they leave me, give me 6 or 7 months, they'll know what they are, and they'll know how to build them, and they'll know how to nurture them for themselves as well.
Let me go back, because you said something right in the beginning that I got to go back to. When you started from the fourth principle, the discipline, disciplined human beings, and you said when you bring the children in, you try to tailor something around what's going on at home.
Yeah.
And, you know, see, that's why I'm enjoying this conversation, because for our listening audience to understand what this brother's talking about, that type of stuff don't go on in public schools. Number one, you got generally white women teaching black boys, and they're afraid of black people anyway. It's a fear going on there, and when these boys do things around these women, all of a sudden they're reported to discipline.
The state.
But I want to go back, because when you said you structured around what's going on at home, you don't have to spend much time on that, but talk about that a little bit. I think that's very important, because there's a lot of things going on in these homes now, and especially with no man there. Talk about it.
Well, you know, my wife passed away in 2014, but when we first started the school, she talked a lot about boarding schools, right? So I never really got that. I never really understood the concept of a boarding school having your children leave you at the most necessary time in their life. But as I'm getting more involved in the children at the school, right? And after 5 o'clock, when they leave on Friday, they had the last 2 days of the week solid. They're doing everything that we require of them, on point, on time, shoes tied, nails looking clean, neat. And on Monday, we got to start all over, right? So she's telling me, the home, we're only surrogates, right? So the parents are the true purveyors of this system that we want to put in place. right? We want to build new African children, right? So it's going to take the parents. They have more responsibility than we do. But see, I always thought the opposite. I was like, no, just give me a little brother. Give him to me for 5 hours a day, 5 years a week. I got him, right? That was romanticizing the whole deal. I had to figure out very quickly that if the system wasn't, you know, congruent with what was going on at home, man, we're going to be spinning our wheels, right? Okay. So we had to develop a program. We got to come into the house. We got to interview the parents. I got to look at his room. I got to see a quiet spot where that brother can sit down and do his work, right? If it is no quiet spot, we got to make one, right? What are some of the things that you say to the little brother, right? Give me a list of things. I say, well, you know what? You should stop saying this, stop saying this, stop saying this, and let's start doing this, right? Okay, well, you know, his father responsible for this and that, and he ain't, okay, some things need to stop saying, right? So I almost have to work as a counselor to some of the parents because they have no idea on how to raise young men.
Okay.
Well, by raising young men, I mean the young men that we want raised, protectors of the community, right? Responsible young brothers and sisters. I'm just using brothers because I have two of my own, and most of the children in school are young men. So I deal with those issues more often than I deal with, you know, the young sisters, even though they have issues as well. But the boys, that's my ultimate concern, because those are going to be the ones that's protecting us in the community. So that home piece, right, going in there and seeing what the environment is, and then we're working. We have, you know, corporal punishment, brother. I put brothers in the push-up stands, you know, the whole shot, right? So some of the brothers say, why you do this to me, but you don't do that to Jamar, right? Because I went to Jamar, I don't tell him this, but I went to Jamar's house and I saw that he comes from violence.
Okay.
Mother violence, brother violence. So now I'm realizing that maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I can't have a blanket show of discipline in the school for all the students. By learning the environment, then I can decide, okay, cool, I ain't going to treat him the same way because he got a different history. I'm going to be more creative with how I discipline this brother. So learning at 50, brother, I'm 50 years old now, and it took me years to figure these things out, right? And I'm still learning them. But it has to be a connection between the school and the home. And sometimes that little brother may have to leave the home if he want to grow, because sometimes there's no growth potential there. And that's just the honest truth of the matter. You know, we have to be very scientific on how we deal with that, of course, but just seeing the environment, man. And the brother got to walk to school. He got to walk through 3 gang territories. You know what I'm saying? So those things we have to deal with. But ultimately, we have to get in there and see and be almost a physician in how we surgically remove things and surgically operate on the home environment. But it's a science to it. I'm not good at it. You know, I think I'm just okay with it. I'm better in the classroom. But again, it ain't gonna be no classroom if these young brothers, you know, can't excel at home. If they can't get this type of environment that's conducive to learn at home, it won't be no classroom. They're not gonna do well in class. And the ones that do well in school are the ones that have parents who are very involved in the process, you know.
Well, listen, you addressed my second question, which was that organic approach, because you're explaining it now. But go ahead, Richard, jump in.
No, I just want to, everything I'm hearing to commend you. Now, I just volunteered at the board level on a charter school. And I'm saying to you, Ellie, and to listening audience, what you're describing as a process that has to be, if we're really going to deal with educating black children, if we're really going to be dealing with developing our natural resource, it's like critical. And what I seen was people who are regional educators, they were responsible for 2,000-3,000 students and 2 and 3 schools. They would not lay out the necessity of that process as a way of being able to address the end product of the creating the excellence of a student, of the, you know, that scholar, that student. I didn't hear it. Matter of fact, you even asked for what do we do? They go back to something else. So I just had to throw that out there.
Right, right. Because the system, and as we know, the system isn't built for that outcome.
Mm-hmm.
The system is built to create children that's going to be status quo, and for children that's going to make the system money, period. You know, they don't want thinkers. I mean, we go back to, you know, how the system was developed. You know, I did a whole piece on that. We know why. We know the whys, right?
Right.
So now we need to start digging in and figuring out, okay, cool. All these minds that we have, these great minds, how can we develop? I'm talking about down to a cookie cutter system where we're going in. Okay, if the you know, brothers like Umar Johnson, they have a handle on how to develop a psychological determinant, how to figure out, okay, what's wrong, how do we get them back on track? Cool, right? So these minds can help create something that's almost like I said, cookie cutter. Well, we figure out, okay, cool, young brother, he's 12. He's having problems with XYZ at home. What are we doing, right? What's the because when we really break down the actual reading, mathematics, science, attentiveness, right? It all starts from the house, man. It all starts from home. Once we get the home straight, he can start going to school, and that whole ADDH, which is mythological anyway, but it has its roots in parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
Video games, critical analysis games. We can start flipping that instead of using the computers. And there's books and there's worksheets we can start doing. There's interactive activities we can do with the parents. It's games that let's cut the TV off. How much TV is done? And I got a whole layout on a sheet that when I interview parents, I got a whole layout. Okay, how much TV is he watching? How much time are you spending with him by just you and him? When last time y'all talked about sex? When last time y'all talked about food? What's the hell? It's a whole layout. So the public school system. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I apologize, but you know, because at one point we were talking about that there need to be a pedagogy, and I'm asking, are you laying out a pedagogy that is specifically designed to educate Black children? I mean, the whole process that you have to go through, is that considered a pedagogy?
It is, and the pedagogy is only how and in what method you're teaching, right? That's all it is. It's your methodology. You know what I'm saying? It's your discipline. Okay, so what is that? Is that a formal style? Mine is informal. You know what I'm saying? My whole approach is informal, but it's academically rigorous, right? But again, we can't have the rigor unless we develop the mind and the discipline, right? Mm-hmm. That comes with food. That's why it's important we have a vegan vegetarian diet, right? What else? We do libations. What else? We have to call on the ancestors. What else? We have to love and say we love Africa. What else? We have to know who we are, knowledge itself. What else? So now we haven't even got to the academics yet. We're talking about developing character. You developing the Ewa. Those are things that we need to develop. Yeah, simultaneously, right? What is it, 60-40? We're doing more on character development than we do in academics sometimes. It depends on how the child comes into school. We got shorties coming to school talking about, man, I ain't no damn African. You call me out again, I'm going to bust your head. I'm going to bust your head, you say it again, right? So do I put this little brother in the same advanced courses? No. We got to, you know, we peeling the onion back now. Okay, cool. What happened to your last school? Man, they kicked me out, man. You know, one of the teachers called me a nigga and boo-boo. What? the regular issues that come down the pipe, basic. Now we have more expansive issues. What? Homosexuality, young boys coming in. Okay, cool. Now my serious parents like, hold on. You know, this conversation being had at the school about, you know, transsexual. Now we got to open. So the issue that we were faced with 10, 15 years ago, it's multiplied now. It's expansive. So that means we as strong African men acting as instructors, our ideas must be expansive as well. And some of the issues that I'm seeing with some African center schools now, they haven't evolved into an expansive way of thinking. Like, how do we address that? If that's against African lifestyle, how do we scientifically address it where we won't be getting heat from the state? You know what I'm saying? So we have to be scientific, not folding, how to address it scientifically. You know what I'm saying? These are conversations that we have at the school every day, because oftentimes parents believe that since, you know, they've heard a lot about our academics, you know, we don't experience the same problems that public school experience. We do. We just have to address them differently. Okay. We have to be very scientific on how we address them, you know?
We're in conversation this evening with activist, educator, and director of Freedom Home Academy International, Brother Marcus Klein. You can get involved in the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. And I want the listening audience also to go to YouTube and look at some of the videos of these children.
Oh, man.
I'm at the point now where I can't believe that those are real videos. I mean, the children are brilliant. We're going to get into that this evening.
Like the last one I just seen, you know, actually breaking down a sentence, the grammar, you know, and this is 6 and 7 years old, right? Or doing a problem, math problem with fraction. And I'm saying, I'm looking at people in sixth grade having challenges with fraction. Yeah.
Well, not only that, Richard, running off the parts of the body, different bones, the capitals of different countries. I mean,
and they love doing it.
Now, listen, right. If I get it twisted, help me out. AIS, AIS intelligence. Talk about that.
Yeah. Okay, so AIS intelligence project, that is, I'm a reader of Dr. Huey P. Newton. So he says that a picture's worth a thousand words, but action is supreme. So we created Action is Supreme, or AIS Intelligence Project, in order for it to be a non-for-profit arm of the school. So what that is, those are materials, reading materials, flashcards. That's the arm for those materials. But in 2016, my son, he left Freedom Home Academy at 16, and he's at Howard now. So as a 16-year-old college student, we figured out very quickly that academics wasn't going to be an issue with our students.
Wait a minute, Brother Marcus, you went over that a little too fast. Come on, you're going too fast. Your son left the school at 16 and was at Howard at 16 years old.
Well, actually, yeah, that's true, but actually, He got a 1300 on the SATs at 15.
Oh my goodness! Okay.
But I promised his mom, you know, she passed. I promised mom he wouldn't go to school until he was 16. He could have gotten at 15. Mm-hmm. He got in at Xavier at 15. He didn't want to go there. He went to Howard, and he got in at 16. So now he's 17. He made the dean's list his first two semesters at Howard. But we knew that was, but you know, he ain't the only one. You know, I got a young brother who got a full ride to Bradley, one of our first students. One of them got a full ride to MIT. And I got another one at University of Tennessee, and another one at University of Southern Cal. So we can do it, right?
Now, wait a minute. I'm sorry to cut you, Brother Marcus. I want our listening audience to understand that these are not young Clarence Thomases that are graduating from school. This is young African centered children that's going to eventually help our people move forward. That's what I want the listening audience to really grasp.
I want to add that the mindset we have to have, not because it's a mindset that we, the listeners who are not the parents, because our narrative has to be that they are our strategic asset. You know, this is something that if we look at them as just exceptional students that went to an exceptional school because they had an exceptional teacher, then we're turning them over to somebody else. If they're our strategic asset, then that means that they are there. They have been cultivated, as you say, to serve our community, to serve our nation. And with a strategic, not just an asset, a strategic asset, you protect that. You invest in that because it provides wealth and whole future opportunities for your people in the future. If you don't do that, then they see it and say
somebody else will.
Right.
They will, no doubt. But okay, now you said that, right? And it's important that you made the distinction. But now we're going to break it down even more.
Go ahead.
Right?
Go ahead.
If we say, what do we need for a nation, right? So we talk a lot about nation building, right? Amos Wilson wrote a book called Black Power, giving a blueprint for Black Power. Right. What do we need if we had a nation right now? How would we be able to sustain it, right? Well, we know we need engineers. You know, we need doctors, things of that nature, right? Okay, let's write a list of the things we need to maintain a nation. And we build courses to teach those children to do just that, right? So if we need civil engineers, we catch a little brother when he's four, right? And we get the civil engineering course curriculum from a major university, and we scale it back and start him off with pre-engineering at 4 years old. So when he's 16, he's ready for Florida A&M, Howard, and whatever other good engineering school is there, right? Because we scale back that college curriculum back to when he was four, so when he's 16, he's ready.
And he's able to handle it.
He's able to do it.
Okay.
Not only do it, he's able to excel.
Go ahead.
You know
I'm sorry.
So, okay, cool. Okay, let's say this then. Let's be more pragmatic than that. My son's 16. He's 16 at the time. He gives me a call 2 months into school. He's on a group. He's on a group chat with some of his fellow students in the classroom. Right now, these students, like 12 of them, they all go to one. They all graduated from some of the best high schools in the city of Chicago: Whitney Young, Walter Payton, Gwendolyn Brooks. Right. He says on the chat, a couple students ready to drop out second month. Right. We are in October at this time. Ready to drop out. Right, my son, not saying nothing. They saying, oh, this class is too hard. You know, they got us doing papers every, we doing essays and papers every 2 weeks, blah, blah, blah. My son ain't saying nothing, right? He calls me after the thing. He's like, look, I'm gonna call with 12 other students. How am I the only one that was doing this work in the sixth grade? Now, this is Howard University, right? And the reason why I'm saying that is, not to be braggadocious, but If we're able to create not just one, because he ain't special. He wasn't even the top of that group. I got another little brother. He could have came out 15. His father didn't want him to go, so he stayed another year. So he ain't the only one. He ain't special. What I'm trying to get maybe the listening audience to understand it, if they don't already, we have all the tools necessary to get this done ourselves. We do not need to ask, beg, or shuffle for anything relative to our children. We have the sources. This cat's way out here smarter than me. And they bring their children right to my school, right? It becomes application. You read 50 books, now teach one of them to your son. Some of them can't do it. No, scratch that. They won't do it. Because there's a belief that the European is a better teacher than themselves. And that's not true. That's where we lose the game. Because now we're sending them off and they have all the tools. These young brothers coming to me very sharp, but they don't believe. They haven't had that mail in them to say, look here, man, there's nothing you can't do. But it's too hard. Okay, we're going to sit down. We're going to figure it out. Now, what did that develop in him? Epic. Okay, cool. All I gotta do is sit down and keep doing it till I do it. Yeah, keep doing it till you do it. just keep rocking, keep rocking it, keep rocking it, and then you got it. That's developing instead of, no, why don't you go to the computer and figure it out yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Go figure it out yourself. We have to instill the things that we want in our children. Nah, how I'm doing it ain't the perfect way. I was easily slid in to this methodology because I built it around my son. And do all the students excel at the school? No. It's not a perfect fit for everyone. It's a lot of work. We get out at 6 every day. We do reading 3 times, math 3 times. And I always show the parents the numbers. What does that mean? Repetition, duration, and frequency. That means if we do math at 9, 11, and 3, that's 3 hours of math. How many times you do it in the state schools? 1 hour, really 50 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. So we've just tripled the amount of reading and math we can do with one student. Now, what does that mean again? Let's break it down. That means whatever I can teach, whatever they teach in the state schools for a year, I can have them two grades ahead in that same year because we've just tripled the output. Hours equals success, so we got an extended day. And we got school in the summer. So those 9-year-olds that you see in the videos doing physics, we're going to have a college physics book. We got a program with DePaul. We got a dual enrollment with DePaul University. We had to lie on the application because I got a couple of students in 11, and the application said you don't even be in at 15. We got some 10-year-olds at the DePaul program, lying application. We can do it, man.
I'm looking at the one of the Facebook my brother posted, and I believe you're aware of Brother Akil, you posted, and you're creating the curriculum out of physics of the future or the psychopathic racial personality and genetics.
Yeah.
Yes, you said, as you say, and if you don't mind piggybacking, we can do this. I mean, yeah. You are an example. We can do this. I just wanted to emphasize that to the listening audience.
Yeah, because you said, Brother Marcus, that you started this in your basement.
In the basement.
Okay.
In the basement of the house, you know. We piecemeal a curriculum together. And again, man, you know, my wife was impetus for that. Again, I didn't believe I can do it. You know, I was like, well, I can research. You know, I can teach my son. I don't think I can teach, you know, 4 or 5 different students. She said, no, you can do it. No, you will do it. Because we looked around at the African Center schools in the city of Chicago. You know, they were culture-based. You know, they saying Swahili terms and they playing drums, though. But I had I wanted something different for mine, you know. So the only way I can do it, I had to create one that I wanted. And then we got a mentorship program or a JEGNA. We don't say mentor. We have a JEGNA program where we teach young brothers how to teach. You know, they're aspiring instructors. So we mentor them. We kind of walk them through the entire process on how to create schools and how to teach in the classroom, classroom ethics, classroom sciences, as it relates to African children.
Wow.
It's a whole different ball game with the European instructors. You know what I'm saying? You know, they come in too. You know, they want to see. I tell them, you know, we don't cater to European children. You know what I'm saying? We don't. You know, that's not. Matter of fact, I wouldn't even know how, you know, to be honest. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, my whole style is conducive to us. You know, I'm from Detroit, so my vernacular is a little different. You know what I'm saying? You know, I say, what up, though, to children? They like that, you know, and they gravitate to me because of my personality. But I would be remiss if I didn't go over some of the courses. So some of the course curriculum at the school, you know, we got a pre-med program for grades K through 12, and that pre-med is dissections, microbiology, and even that genetics class. So we added genetics with microbiology simultaneously, but we like to use. I was listening before I came on. You had Dr. Johnny Clark, a piece he did, and we're using now. What's the name of Michael Bradley's book?
Iceman Inheritance.
Iceman Inheritance. We're reading Iceman Inheritance because he did the Johnny McClark did the foreword to that.
Right.
And we also John John G. Jackson's African Civilization. He also did a foreword to that. So we're reading those two. So I like to use those two books and Dr. Bobby Rice's book, Psychopathic Personalities, simultaneously. And what that does is that gives them an opportunity to see, Dr. Sagan to Diaz first, when he talks about the original Africans, the original people on the planet, where they came from. So that's almost like the first thing that we do. And then we move out of that, and then we go into some more political pieces for the older students. And again, we have to be scientific, because remember, some of the students come in and they don't want to be called African. So we got to hit them hard. And the way I do it is, when they get 10 and 11, I don't hit them with African civilizations first. Depends on where they coming out of. You know, I know if they're coming off the block, like most of our students are at that age, I hit them with the Black Panther Party. So mm-hmm. We start off with the Panther Party first, and then we'll start moving into, you know, the continent of Africa. You know, because when we teach about the party has so many pragmatic programs that we can actually show, health clinics, free breakfast programs, you know, free lunch programs, you know, things of that nature. They can see that. So now it's like, oh, wow, they was doing that. And then, you know, they attracted to the gun too. You know, they attracted to the gun. So they see Huey with the gun, and they see the party with the gun. So now they're enamored by that. So, but those are some of the systems. Then we got a pre-law program as well. We have a judge and a full-time attorney comes in and teaches law, which is what, real practical stuff. You know what I'm saying? We learn out of the book, of course, but, you know, we learning what to do when you get pulled over, you know, things that we need in the neighborhood for young brothers. And then we also have, engineering program early. That's pre-engineering. That's first graders too, all the way up. And then we have entrepreneurship program, which is important. You can't create a business program, entrepreneurship program, without knowledge of self first. Because Canada, you know, he started making money, he's spending money right back to them. So we got to have a culture and a politic as a foundation when we teach our entrepreneurship program. But, you know, of course, the other courses, you know, science, math, chemistry.
Brother Mark.
We're not.
Oh, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Now, I was going to say, you know, we're not pigeonholed by age and grades. So our system is based on upper mobility. So we assess every Friday. So we have an exit and an enter. So you can move to the third grade if you meet our requirements. Yeah. You know, you can move to the fourth grade in 2-3 months if you meet our requirements, you know. So of course we're licensed by the state of Illinois, so Board of Ed. So we have to add their requirements as well, which is super low. Now I got a 3-year-old. He just turned three last week. So I got him on a whole program. We opened up a nursery too. So we teaching the 2-year-old. I don't know if you've seen him on the video, but we teaching them how to read. We teaching them how to read early. So I was telling one of the instructors, you know, since this whole COVID-19 thing, I've been home, you know, revising the schedule. So she said it's gonna be more work for me. I was like, yeah, because I've been at home revising it. I've been pushing everything back. So I want him to be reading and doing timetables. Before his fourth birthday, like my other son was doing. She was like, "Mom, Marcus, I don't know how I'm gonna do that." I said, "Don't worry about it. We're gonna take care of it. I'm gonna hit him at home, then I'm gonna hit him at school too." But you know, I just say that. You know, I sometimes say that jokingly, because we have to be flexible too on how we deal with children. You know, I play around with the children, you know, as well. But you know, sometimes based on the personality of the child, he never see me smile and laugh, because it's sometimes I get so serious on how far he's behind. Sometimes I get discouraged too. But I got a 13-year-old, man, he's reading on a second grade, third grade level. College ain't going to be an option for him. Mm. We don't have enough time. You know, we don't have enough time. So we have to develop a 3-pronged method, you know, trade school, entrepreneurship, and college. You know, I can't push college on a cat who can't read. He's 13. 14th birthday coming up. So again, you know, those things, we have to be scientific, you know, on how we deal with children. It can be cookie cutter on how we deal with them, you know.
Brother Marcus, now the school goes from preschool to eighth, or preschool all the way up to 12?
Well, we do nursery school now, so nursery school is 12th grade.
Okay. Now, just give me a little brief. You don't have to do it for every grade, but just give me a little brief. Now, you got the Azania grade level, preschool 2 to 4 years old. Now, in order for them to move into the Togo grade, which is kindergarten through first grade, what must they achieve at that preschool to four-year-old level?
So we've changed the names, but the age is still the same. So Mali would be first grade. So to leave our preschool to get into my group is Mali. Those are the first graders. Those are ones you see on the videos a lot, reading the sentences. So you got to have, we go through, just, I'm going to be real quick. I'm going to be real brief for you. So we go through 400. There's 400 vocabulary words for the preschoolers, right? So in order to get out of preschool to go to first grade, you got to have a 400 vocabulary strength. You have to know how to double digit, subtract, double digit, and you have to know the first three multiplication tables, right? Why? Because when we go into first grade, we're reading out of those books I just named. Getting out the D.I.P. You know what I'm saying? But they're paragraphs. We're not reading the whole text. I extract the paragraph out of the book, and we go sentence by sentence when we get to the first grade. As they move up to the third grade, then we start reading chapters. And when we get to the fifth and sixth, I start giving the books out to them, right? So let's go back real quick. So, again, just answer your question. To get out of the preschool and go to first grade, you have to have a word strength of 400, the first 400 vocabulary words, the first three timetables by heart, you know, we get world tests. And then there's a kindergarten state checklist that we use, which is shapes, spell your name, write your name, the basic stuff that we that group, that stuff we teach in nursery school. Like my son doing the kindergarten stuff, he's three. So what I tell parents, the most important thing from jump is writing. Writing, 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 tracing, writing, writing their name. Because once you teach them how to write, man, the sky's the limit. You know, you can start teaching them everything, you know. But yeah, so that's answer your question. In order to lead that group, you know, they have to be able to recite. I give them oral tests. You know, I put the paper in front of them out of order. I ask them each one, boom, they can do that. And write, they can come over to me. We get them. Yeah.
Wow. I have to say, I know, Ellie, you wanted to go to a break, but if you do, you know, when we come back, because there's a couple of areas, I mean, this is so exciting to me. One thing is, like, I hear what you do, and I see now you're able to duplicate, if I understand it right, you have other schools, even in other cities or states that you're are developing. The thing about replication, replication of teachers that could be able to do, and replication, you know, in institutional building. I'm interested in that aspect.
Okay.
Of it. And the other is, and you mentioned Umar earlier, are all the other independent operators, educators who are looking at our students, you know, like this, are there structural collaboration around that at this point?
Absolutely. We got a brother in Brooklyn, Q Butter School, doing extremely well. I would say I helped his development. He's doing extremely well in Brooklyn. Then we got one of my Jegnas, brother Limu Baruti in Atlanta. He has the Aquaben House. He's doing extremely well, and there are collaborative efforts going on with us. We do. And what it is important that we do that for a couple of reasons. First reason is there's no such thing as competition when we're building for our children, right? So that whole capitalistic mindset, you know, it's definitely a thin line that we draw, right?
Okay.
But at the end of it all, if a brother say he want to build a school, first I need to find out, man, what's your mind state? You know, where you at with some certain principles before I help you. You can do what you want. But as far as me helping you, you know, it's certain things I'm not bending on. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, we could talk about that off the air. But it's certain things I don't bend on. my school would never participate in certain things and be with certain type of organizations. You know, coming from a political standpoint, that's important for the non-erosion of what we stand for. But yes, not all the schools, you know, but those two I mentioned, and there's a couple of more that they are a collaborative effort with. And I'm proud, you know, to say that I know these brothers that's doing it, because I know it's hard work. It's hard work. It's harder dealing with the parents than the students, brother, you know. So I understand, you know, having 125 students now, it's like, man, the parents, you know, it's definitely a challenge.
Yep. Man, and I believe, and we need to commend you and praise you for that, you know, as far as being a master educator, you know, with Baba Asa Hilliard was talking about, you know, what we need to do and what we need to create in order to create those students.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832 to ask, I guess, a question or make a comment to activist, educator, and director of Freedom Home Academy International, Brother Marcus Klein. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me had held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Encourage, let me just say this,
before our time winds up. And that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are, and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're enjoying the conversation this evening with activist, educator, and director of Freedom Home Academy International, Brother Marcus Klein. You can get involved in the conversation, ask a question, make a comment by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We heard Malcolm on that collage there talking about changing our minds. That's where it starts. We've had folks on here, other activists, educators, historians, that talk about the importance of us knowing who we are in order for our people to move forward. It starts in the mind first. I'm glad Brother Klein is starting where it needs to start, with our children, and molding our children's minds to move our people forward. This is a valuable conversation. I hope some of our listeners understand that they need to get involved with their children's education. This is our future. This is one of the most important programs that we've had this year. Get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Let's go to 484. 484, are you there? What's your name, brother? What's your name? Where are you calling from? I'm sorry. 484. Let's put them back on hold. I don't know whether they stepped away or whatever. Let's go to caller here. Caller, what's your name? Where you calling from? Oh, caller, are you there? Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to 646. 646.
Hey, what's going on, Brother Richard and Elliot and Brother Klein? Hey, listen, Brother Clyde, I just want to say, man, you are an African hero, man. I have a friend of mine whose son used to go to your school, man, and he just raved about your school. You know, I've read things online, I've watched your videos, and all of that, man. You what one should really see as a real African hero, man, for the manner in which you educate our children. Now, my question to you is this. You spoke earlier about the young brother who's 13 years old that reads on the second grade level. And, yeah. You know, my question to you is, what do you do when you run across a child like that to get him to a level to be able to read on, you know, the level that he should be? Because I remember back in the day, I don't know if you ever met this sister or not, that ran across kids just like that, the great Marva Collins. Now, I know her thing wasn't African-centric and anything like that, but, you know, I was always amazed by her, how she was able to take the kids that you're talking about and getting them up to level. And I have a follow-up question after you answer that.
Okay, so I appreciate the words, though, brother. Thank you. I think initially, again, we have to figure out what's going on at home, because whatever I do, if it's not replicated at home, it's not going to work. So first we got to do a real quick inventory of what's going on at his house, right? After we do that, there are core classes that he would take, that he will not take a foreign language we offer. He wouldn't take any electives. You know, only thing that he's going to take is the core, reading and math, period. And we start just like we start a second grader off. We have to start with vocabulary. So we start him with a healthy dose of vocabulary. Even before reading, we have to start him off with vocabulary. So we figure out exactly through an assessment we do from jump. We figure out what his vocabulary is and where he is with that. And then we build on top of it. I mean, I can get him reading. But, in addition to that, knowledge itself, he has to know who he is. Sister Marva Collins, she did a great job. Her methodology was superb. However, the Shakespeare and the enhancements on European literature, it does our children a disservice. And I'm just going to be honest with you, because if we don't learn about our classics first, we're looking at the future and history and the past through the eyes of a European as African children. So that does us a disservice. But her methodology was good. I mean, she did great work. I'm not going to take anything away from that. But from what I've researched and learned about that particular system, a European system on African children, it's definitely debilitating. So I steer clear away from that. However, to answer your question, we definitely have to start them from the beginning. So if he has a second grade reading level, we start him off with second grade words and work our way up. The good thing is he has a mental capacity by him being older. He has a mental capacity to absorb more words than a regular second grader. You know, So we do that. We can do that. We can get him to read, but then we got to go with comprehension. We got to go with critical analysis. So we build on top of that, but yeah, we got to work backwards. We work with second grade up. Yeah.
Now, my brother, that answer right there, I definitely understand what you're saying in regards to Sister Collins. Now, I know that there's a brother that had independent black school before you did, Brother Hakeem Madhubuti. And in regards to my second question is using maybe his school as an example with teaching our kids about our culture and things of that nature. How do we move our kids forward to when they gain the type of success that they gain in being in schools like yours and, you know, with Hakeem school was like earlier? How do we get them to understand that for the rest of their lives they have to be Africans? Because that to me is the most important thing. Because a lot of them become Europeans, if the truth be told, once they get that education and they're able to go to college like the Harvards and the Yales and all that. If you're not giving them an African true identity like Baba Barudi, you know what I mean, and some of the other brothers that you talked about. So how do we do that? Because that's the key to our sovereignty and our survival in this world. Hold up, brother, and I thank you so much for who you are.
Thank you, brother. And I agree with everything you said 100%. I think a solution to that, in other words, your question is, how do we get our children to come back to us when they leave those institutions? And, you know, it's simple. They have to see success through us. They have to see it. So by us just teaching it, you know, if I told and taught my son about everything from a historical standpoint, Africa and African civilization and Black Panther Party, he would know it, but he wouldn't necessarily know how to implement that and how to take the information that he got from, let's say, a Harvard and bring it back to the community. It goes back to what you and I discussed earlier. When we have a system in place that the children know, like we talked about nation building, okay, cool. His first 12 years, all we talked about was how are you going to use these skills and bring them back to the community, right? How are we going to do that? When we talk about having a school from an African center, that means every aspect of his course curriculum needs to be relative to Africa and how that benefits us. Chemistry. Why am I in this class, Bob Marcus? You're going to be a chemist. You like chemistry? Yeah, you're going to be a chemist. So what I'm going to do? You're going to do chemistry relative to us. Mm-hmm. I love history. You're going to teach history relative to us, right? But what we've been doing is we've been saying, oh, yeah, dude, when you graduate from school, you're going to get you a job and you're going to make money, right? So now they're like, all right, cool. I'm going to make money. I'm going to make money at IBM. I'm going to go to Google and make money, right? But we have to get out of that mindset and say, look, yes, if you want to make finances, you can do that. But let's think of how you can make finance at the same time and helping our people, right? And quiet as it's kept, we got to make it cool. Because if it ain't cool, the young people ain't going to be attracted to it. We got to make it cool, and we got to make it pragmatic. Yes, it can't be just a class that they're taking at an African center school. This school is a school that just so happens to be African center. No, we have to implement every aspect of that school and inject into the children how it's going to benefit us, period. So by the time he gets out and he decides to do his graduate studies at Harvard, he wants to be a doctor. Okay, cool. He's already been injected into the philosophy. Okay, this is what I need to do. When I become a doctor, I'm coming back to the neighborhood. Either I'm going to build a hospital or I'm going to work in tandem with someone who already has one, and I'm going to help all my people. Mm-hmm. He ain't going to be able to see that if he got a class in chemistry and biology and it's talking about white people, but you African center school. Right, we have to implement that in his lifestyle. It has to be how he lives, and goes back to what. Yeah,
you know, I apologize, but what you sparking at, because I think that's so critical important, because therefore we have to have a policy. And what I'm thinking about, Cuba has a program, and it says it wants African American students to come. You can come to go to Cuba, but as a part of the policy. You have to go back. Once you get your doctor, you have to go back and work in your community. That policy initiative is on us to create in order to help direct. And those elements that you said, being cool, being given direction, they will follow through because they've already been cultivated.
That's right.
You know, but if we don't create no policy, then we're leaving it on them to make decisions with other people influencing them because they want that talent.
Yep.
That's right. And what does the system do as well? The system does not teach how the system works for the maintenance of white supremacy. It doesn't teach that, does it?
No.
It teaches you, once you get your money, what's the next step? You get your job. What's the next step? You retire. And you leave that money to your child, and the child goes through the same system, boom, boom. But we can break that by saying what? Look, when you get your money, what are you going to do then? Okay, I'm going to invest part of it, and I'm going to, the other part, I'm going to try to start a business. A business in what? Oh, I want to do, well, if you haven't been studying trends for the next 10, 15 years, what you want to do, you want to study psychology in college and waste 4 years? No, you're going to study those fields that's going to be lucrative for the next 15, 20 years, right? Studying trends, right? Cool. Let's do that. You want to be a teacher? Okay, what else? Well, I want to own my school. That's what we're talking about, right? We're talking about ownership and independence. Now it becomes, okay, I can see that now. I can see that. Who you know does that? I do. Oh, right. Mm-hmm. By Marcus, right? You know what I'm saying? So those things, once it becomes pragmatic to them, once they can see it, but you have to do the work, though. And the work is, okay, we got a rigorous academic program. They're learning the skills. And when they get out, they have to be solid with the skills. And they have to have a fervor and love for their people. How do you do that? Okay, you teach about successful African people. Okay, what is that? Success isn't determinant on how much money you make. Success is determinant on how you treat others, how you treat your people, and what kind of father are you? What kind of husband are you? That goes back to the EY again. Those things are incubated in the classroom, but they're learned at home. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So all those things are important. That was a good question he asked. I get that question a lot. Because it's imperative that we bridge the gap between what's being learned at the house and make it congruent to what's being learned at school, you know?
Brother Klein, let me I want to read these statistics, and I know you're aware of them, mm-hmm. but I'm just reading them basically for the listening audience, because mm-hmm. I want to kind of dovetail that on a question. 60% of America's prison inmates are illiterate, and 85% of all juvenile offenders have reading problems. Sadly, the percentage of criminals who have reading illiteracy problems is not surprising. What is shocking, however, is how how many children are at risk of illiteracy. Today, fully 67% of America's fourth graders can't read at fourth grade proficiency level, and 33% score below the basic competency level. Brother Marcus, you talked earlier in the conversation about the children moving from the preschool to four-year-old level, the first grade, mm-hmm. that they have to have a 400-word proficiency and do certain maths.
Yeah.
Now, help me with this. How do mm-hmm. they have a 400-word proficiency when they? What is the process of teaching 2- and 3-year-olds all of these words? It can't be phonics, although I know phonics is important, and I want to talk to you about phonics. But
good question. Go ahead.
Help our listening audience to understand. See, they can do this. We don't have to turn our children over to Europeans.
Yeah. That's right.
Tell us how this
That's
is done.
Right. So my favorite subjects, right? I'm looking right now at one of my favorite books right here. It's called SAT. It's the SAT practice book, right? So what SAT says, I'm gonna be quick. I'm gonna be real.
Take your time.
What SAT says, along with the College Board, they say you need a vocabulary strength in order to get a perfect score on SAT. One of the components is getting a vocabulary strength of 3,200 words, right? And they give all the words in the glossary in the book, right? So my question was, in 2009, I said, if SAT is the hallmark, right, why not teach the children the SAT words first, so by the time they get to the end game, they'll be prepared? So we broke down the 3,000 words into 6 years, right? Those 6 years broke down into four semesters a year, 12 weeks per semester. So we came up with 240 words a semester, right? And we broke that down to weeks. So that's 20 words a week, right? So you know where I'm going here. Mm-hmm. So if we're saying 20 words a week, we need to do that three times a day. And we give them an assessment on Friday. Now, I'm a phonics guy. I'll teach phonics until they are done and tired of hearing it. PL, CL, AI, OI, those phonics are important. Now they can break the word down without me telling them what the word is, right? So now I said 20 words a week. I would get them ready, vocabulary ready for the SATs by the end of sixth grade, right? But they have to stay on course, which means they're doing with me and they have to have a regimen at home, right? Parents like, those words are too hard, right? So we filtering through. So we starting off with 20 students in September. We got 13 by June, right? Mm-hmm. The seven
that's a good
make
percentage
it.
Too. Yep. It's still a good seven, percentage.
Seven couldn't make it, right? So the ones that make it, those are the ones you see on the videos, right? With reading levels, I got a 9 year old. She just turned 10. Yeah, she just turned 10. She has a reading level of 12th grade. I'm going to have her take her SATs next. I'm going to have her take them next week, right? And I don't put a lot of stock in that. But what it does give me a framework, right? I don't put a lot of stock in SATs, but it does give me a framework. It tells me words. We know the Wall Street Journal has a reading level of 10th grade. Financial Times has a reading level of 11th grade, right? So if I have them reading that fluently, I know that they can be between 9th and 10th grade, right? We go right to the source. You know, no ambiguity. You know, we go straight in, and it's no question on the reasons why we're doing it. You know, these are SAT words, and you know what the end result is. We want you to be prepared for that by end of sixth grade. And they are. They take it end of sixth. Don't do well, get an 800, 900. We take it every year. You know, we finish off with 1250s, full rides, right? Cool. So how do we teach reading? Putting words together isn't reading. Reading is comprised with understanding, comprehension, of course, inflections, and grammar, right? So we have to take English in accordance with vocabulary and sentence structure, and there's other things that go along with it. But we were able to streamline all that and just say, we're going to read, and then we're going to do English at the same time. So how are we teaching a four-year-old that? Same way. We using flashcards, and I have some other methods that I teach for those who doesn't gravitate to visual. And let's go back real quick. The system only caters to students who are auditory and visual. But there's a third component that's kinesthetic. A lot of our children are kinesthetic, but the state and the state schools, they look at kinesthetic children as being special, right? But they're not. They just learn differently. Our children learn differently than European children. Brother Amos Wilson, he wrote a whole book on that, mm-hmm. On how different our children are. And if we teach them from a European paradigm, we're going to be doing them a disservice, and that's why they fall behind so quick. So those stats that you gave about the reading scores by fourth grade, he also talked about how our children are neck and neck by the time they get to three years old, we're on point, you know. By the time we come out of the daycare structure into a regular school, we're behind. Why? Because the daycare system, they don't teach reading. Not all, of course, but the majority of them are play and television. Mm-hmm. Right. So by the time we get to kindergarten, our children are below. So we said we're gonna open up a second school called School Literacy, and we're gonna focus on just that, literacy. We're gonna bang words, bang sentences, and read, read, read. So by the time they get to the first grade, we're ready for third grade material. That was the goal. And we've been able to do that, but it had to be compounded. We have what's called a scaffold. We have a scaffold method. I talk a lot about scaffolding, because our dendrites and our brain, we learn faster when, let's say we have a word like book, right? We know the word book, but if I say it's a red book, you never seen the word red before as a child, you're gonna be able to recall the word book faster because you just learned another word attached to it, red book. So you're able to recall those words faster when other words are built on top of it. That's why we do vocabulary, then we go to phrases, and then sentences, then paragraphs, and then books. It's a system that we go through, and the children, they gravitate quickly to that system. So their reading level is intensified by the time they get to second and third grade.
Wow.
It's one thing that I like to, is the question that comes to mind. You had mentioned earlier about having 17 instructors. I'm gonna have to assume that these are people that have a specific understanding. I think you alluded to that, and most of them being men themselves.
Yes.
What's the process you use in order to identify those who would become teachers in an institution that like you have?
That's a good question, and it is a challenge because you have to meet me, not us. You have to meet me with pay scale and love, right? So most often, those that have the pedigree that I'm looking for, I can't afford them. And those that have the fervor and love, you know what I'm saying, they don't really have the pedigree. So I have to get those in between. And again, you know, we have to be very creative. I know 17 instructors, you know, out of 17, there's about five I don't have to come in and look at, you know, every 2-3 hours. You know, five are solid. And that five, they do the heavy lifting. Yeah. Mm. Oh, sorry about that, brother.
No problem.
Those five do the heavy lifting, and the others, you know, have to pretty much micromanage. And again, it's not a perfect system. I don't want to even try to sell to be a perfect system. But those instructors who matter of fact, I'll just say this: I'll take an instructor who has a genuine love for our children and is not a good teacher before I'll take the opposite, that good teacher who's really doing it for the money. Every time I'll take the, and I've had my bumps and bruises with those instructors, you know, when they come in, I got some PhDs that work for me right now, and they come in like, I don't know how this works because it's so untraditional. You know, you're teaching a first grader pre-med and pre-law. They're looking at that like, how are you able to do that? This doesn't work because they've been trained a certain way. And if it doesn't fit into their way of thinking, you know, it's not going to work. And they come in just like that because those institutions teach that. They teach this is the way. Well, we know that because the first universities for teachers was Rockefeller University, Columbia University. That was a teacher university. So they were taught a particular way of teaching that will enable the child and make the child believe that, you know, there's only a certain level that I can go to. And it's the same today. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's not as many independent African Center schools. And those that start off independent, now they're not, the brother mentioned, Brother Haki, Bishop Shabazz is now a charter school. They're no longer independent because, you know, oftentimes our parents don't necessarily respect, African Center programs as much as they respect the state programs.
Yes,
so man. We knew that and we understood that going in. That's why we said we have to overcompensate. We have to do so what X private school is doing, we have to add 10 more courses for less money. You know, so that's why we're so cheap. So we know scientifically that they're gonna scrutinize and hold us to a different standard that they would at a European institution. So we have to overcompensate, you know, and it's difficult for schools that aren't academically rigorous, you know, that's culture. And I don't even want to say culture, because a lot of them schools, you know, what they consider culture ain't even that. It's right. Subculture. You know what I'm saying? It ain't really African. You know, it's something else. But, you know, not to diss them, but, you know, understanding how African culture, understanding the significance and the importance of African culture, you know, it ain't just Swahili. You know what I'm saying? It ain't just wearing dashikis. You know, it's more than that. You know what I'm saying? But that it, and if we're not able to evolve, and like I mentioned before, like we gotta be scientific on how we operate our schools now. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot different than it was in the 80s and the 90s. I saw a video, Baba Steve Coakley gave me and my wife a video from Anyan Palmer School, the Gary Institute. Changed my life. I knew then, like, we gotta do this. Like, his school, it was the epitome of what I wanted to create, you know what I'm saying? The Garvey School in LA. So yeah, but again, it's important for him to do it, not just for now, but for prosperity, you know what I'm saying? So we gotta say, yes, we wanna do great things. And in order for us, we have to see it. We have to see those great things being done. And one of the reasons why I'm here, Baruti School, Ackerman House, you know, I saw that. I was like, okay, his brother's actually doing it. Yeah, I can do it too.
Let's go to 647. Are you there? 647.
I was talking too long, I guess.
Yeah, let me put that back on hold.
Well, can I ask another question?
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask about, and I think you just touched about the thought of what I was formulating around the Council for Independent Schools, CB, but the you know, but the point of, okay, so how do we support this creative process that you're going to, creative institutional building process and the product development that you're doing? I mean, it's important for us to understand that for Elliot, we always talk about the politics. This is internal politics, because education,
right.
This is our internal political educational initiative.
Mm-hmm.
So people have to understand that we have a role, especially when we're talking about that all these people who say we're nationalists, pan-Africanists, we have a role.
Yeah.
And we also have a history of how it collapsed. And you gave the examples of how they shifted into charter schools, right? So how do you see us being able to support? We need to put that out there from a person who is a practitioner and operator as yourself.
Well, I think the onus is going to be on me. I have to inform and be very open. I think, you know, that whole transparency thing, you know, due to some other issues that have happened, you know, it's left some of our community, you know, kind of distrusting. Because, you know, some of the things that have happened. So I think the onus has to be on us as directors and owners of these schools to inform our community on what we need, how we need to maintain these schools. Because y'all can't guess. You can't guess, okay, maybe I'm going to send some paper and a couple of dollars. I mean, I tell people all the time, you know, even outside of money, some things that I need at the school, you don't need to send me money. You know, I need, like, paper. I need paper towels. I need pencils, you know, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. That's important, because when I look at my end of the month and I see I spent, you know, $400 or $500 on supplies, I got 10 people, you know, to send me $50. Boom. I got that. That's the one less thing I have to worry about. And all those things, of course, you know, as business owners, we know those things add up. In addition to that, you know, $5-$10. But again, you know, we go back to being scientific. What I have personally, and I don't know about, you know, the other brothers with their schools though, but I have what you call the EduStream. I have an EduStream program, which is a part of my money that I come in for tuition. We open up other businesses. So we own a couple of buildings now. You know, we do real estate. We got a paper company. You know, we're producing toilet paper now. Actually, we just got it a month ago. So we want to produce toilet paper.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So that came out of, like, me figuring out that, okay, we definitely need another stream, because they got parents late for tuition and things of that nature. So, you know, just not romanticizing the whole deal and being, you know, pretty transparent. You know, I don't tell my parents all my business financially, but I let them know what we need, you know, and by communicating that, they can look at it like, okay, for one, I have an investment here, you know, I'm a part of the community. So by them understanding that, they feeling comfortable about that, they are more willing to give when they feel like they're part of the community, not just me getting all the money and, you know, that nature. So that's one of the things that people can do, you know. They can support by finding out these schools. And there are some organizations that that was just started to help out Ashland Center schools. And, you know, we appreciate those. They send money and, you know, for donations and every little bit help. But at the end of it all, we need to start supporting these institutions with children. You know, we need to start bringing children. That's the ultimate support. You know, bring your children. You know, don't say, you know, you're pro-black and you're about the nation, but there's an African center school that's viable down the street from you, but you take them to a European school. And I understand that, you know, oftentimes, a lot of these parents, and I know them personally, they tell me all the time how much they love me, but they send their children to another school. And their children aren't even doing as good as my worst students. You know, some of my worst students do. I'm serious. But you know, and I think that's a whole other show on how a black male running operating a school is. It's a culture shock. It's a every other kind of shock, you know, to African women and men, you know, sending children off to another male. You know what I'm saying? I talk about that, you know, a lot too, on some things that we have to deal with as being men, you know, allowing, you know, because of my personality, some of the children go home and they say, yeah, I want to be like Baba Marcus, you know, to a father, you know, that they can take a hit. And that can take a hit for another man. To hear they son saying they want to be like another man at school. So then you have a young man too, and you giving them money. We're not used to that. Black women not used to giving a black male, you know, tuition. You know, so that's a whole different thing too that I'm dealing with. I've been dealing with for a long time. But man, you gotta be cut from a different cloth to run and operate.
and what you're speaking to is our particular culture that we have to be attuned to instead of this romantic notion that we have.
That's right.
That isn't really based in reality. We're really not teasing that out. I think, you know, like all the things that you're saying is like really important, but we have to, and that education is an economy. It's a political economy. Right. If we don't look at it like that, I know some people, you know, when you throw that term out there and you throw these terms out there, Elliot, you know, people start saying like, oh, that's too complicated. But if we don't look at it, this is an industry, and it's billion-dollar industry. And there's spinoff industry, publishing, art, all these are interconnected industries, science, the science equipment, you know, this educational, and we have the ability to be able to create a self-containing based off of the process that you lose. Because as you say, obviously white teachers, white institutions can't do it. They're mislabeling whatever. So here we have an opportunity to control something and grow it, scale it up, and has international capacity. It isn't just here. You know, I just think that it's important to, you know, lay that out be able to get point. People understand that the reason why we're not scaling up, and we do have historical precedents, because if we look after Reconstruction, we built a educational infrastructure from the federal system, from those, Elliot, you talk about them all the time, those congressmen put in the policy for public education that did not exist.
That's right.
You know, so we have a precedence of doing it, and they did it. They took the literacy rate from damn near zero up and built and was supplied all those black colleges.
But something had to happen. So when Mr. Rockefeller took the trip to Atlanta, he said in his book, I'm looking at his book right now, He said he took the trip to Atlanta to develop, specifically to develop black colleges. Mm-hmm. Spelman was the first he started. He needed to dumb down these African children who were. I mean, this cat sent me a. I know it's off topic,
but no, it's all relevant.
He sent me a test. This was like 2010. It was a test from after Reconstruction. It was 20 questions on it at an African school, right? 20 questions. I couldn't answer none of them. But after they put in the compulsory school system that they got from Prussia, and it's already been documented, Mr. Elizabeth Peabody and Horace Mann, it was the objective was to make people less critical thinkers and more workers.
Right. And we can see that historically,
yeah,
in the 19th century, when they had in here in Philadelphia, they had the Institute for Color. It was first called the African Institute. That's 1830 somewhere. I apologize for not having it, but they moved it to vocational. They would, you know, like we because they by the eighth grade they were doing classics,
right.
Greek,
exactly.
Hebrew, Latin.
Yeah.
This is eighth grade. I tell the students all the time. I say, this is eighth grade. You in ninth grade. This is what they was doing in eighth grade. Oratory.
In eighth grade. That's right. That's right. But we can bring that back, though.
Yeah, exactly.
We can bring that back. We can bring it back. All it's going to take is it's a collective, though. You know, right. two, three brothers with some great ideas aren't going to do it. It's going to take a collective. And we have to prove to the people that it can be done. And the only way to prove it is we have to show people, because I tell people all the time, you know, we have been in the school, but when they come in to the school for interviews, I don't even push that. I go right to the academics. The reason why is if they knew my politics from jump, they'd be too afraid to come to the school, right? But after the first month, when they see their child is doing advanced math and advanced reading, and then they find out, oh man, he talking about Malcolm X, Garvey, and the Panther Party all the time. They don't want. It's too late now. They're like, okay, he's doing too well. I'm gonna go ahead and follow that part because I want my son, you know, because he's doing more than what he was doing. You know what I'm saying? So, but yeah, you know, the politic piece, what you mentioned before, the schools, African center schools in particular, are an economy. And when I talk to people who want to do schools, I always tell them, you know, you can build an economic base, right, around schools. Just even just off what you said, you know what I'm saying? You got 50 parents, you know what I'm saying? So now those 50 parents can be your consumers. So when you develop paper towels, your first customers are your parents. You know, when you start selling the food that you're growing in the back, you can start selling, your first customers would be your parents, you know. So we definitely can build off of schools, because what, you know, the private schools and parochial schools, they've been doing it, what, for 120 some years, you know what I'm saying? And that's how they've been able to sustain, you know, their communities. You know,
y'all know I get it. I guess y'all can hear that I get too excited about this because it's so realistic, you know, because I'm thinking, you know, everybody just got a free $1,200. Right? They just got a free $100. I mean, yeah, people saying they need and whatever, but they got a free $1,200. Take 20 people with a free $1,200 looking at your academy and as a collective and say, okay, we want to invest this $20,000-$30,000 now. And we're not just turn it. We want to create, and now we're looking at, well, what area of this educational institution that we can create an investment? And you've already defined. You done created a paper company. These are companies,
yeah, right,
that is going to create revenue, jobs that 20 people could be investing in, getting a return more than what they're going to get out of a bank, because they ain't getting no interest.
But look, even outside of that, you ain't got to invest in me. You can invest in your child.
Right.
So what I tell the parents in the business class, okay, it's 16 students. That means we can couple students up, eight groups, two students. We figure out, I give them a list of eight small businesses that they can start less than $200, right? T-shirts. One of the brothers say, "Man, I want to make gym shoes." So I gave him a website. He's going to try and make gym shoes, right? So what is that doing? Nah, you ain't got to give me that money. Because when you invest in that student's company, right, you can see the fire in his eyes. You want to come to school every day because what happened in school? It's 120 students. So they selling chips now. They stacking their little money, right? So now they say, okay, cool. I know how to make chips now. Now they're doing research online. I know how to get a bagging company, get a bagging machine. Right. That's what we want. We want cats to be innovators.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to build it. You ain't necessarily got to give me the money because by you supporting him, you're going to support me.
That creativity.
That's right. That's right.
And they call it innovation. You know, when it happens into these prep schools, these private schools and these universities, these students are innovators. You know, they ain't guaranteeing that they're going to come out with anything, but they sitting there coming up with something, you know, and say, well, this work,
right.
Will this angel invest in this? But I think that, you know, that we have to expand and understand what it is to be a nation and what business are we in. And if that's we're right. in the business of creating Africans, that's our business.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so I'm sorry.
Let me make the rounds again. Let's go to 215. 215, question or comment for our guest?
Is that me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I got an excellent show tonight, bro. How do you like with adults? Do you have a program set up for adults that they want to learn? Because I went through Catholic school for 13 years, graduated from Catholic high school, and I had to learn a lot of stuff on my own, man. I had to re-educate myself. And
yeah, you know,
how do we, you know, do you have a phone number or something if we want to send a donation or paper towel or address?
Definitely, brother. Two things. First of all, we are starting an adult class. We're going to do adult classes online. So if you can, take down this email. I want you to email myself your email address. But I'm going to put you on this Zoom call we're going to do on Saturday. So we starting an adult classes starting on Saturday. That's Saturday after next. So this Saturday we're going to do a Zoom call. And we're going to introduce the actual course curriculum. So I want you to be on it, though. So that email is – can you write it down now or you want me to –
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, only thing I don't have email, I
gotta
get somebody to hook it up for me.
Okay, all right, that's cool. But that's gonna be Freedom Home Academy. Freedom Home Academy.
Yeah. Freedom.
The number two.
Two. Okay.
@gmail.com.
Gmail.
Yeah, I'm gonna give you all the information on Saturday. Times of classes, what classes, and all that. Yeah, you'll be able to participate.
Okay. Good.
Appreciate that, bro.
Oh, I appreciate you, bro.
Thank you for your call.
Because it's needed, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We talked about that. It got to be a connection. It got to be a connection at home and with the children. If it's not connected, you know, it's not going to work. It's a village, man.
Yeah.
Was that your last comment? You had more, Brother Mo?
Yeah. Just what I understand is that I see you doing it right, and a lot of people just they overlook what Elijah Muhammad did with the Muhammad University. They pulled their children out of public schools, and they fought. They had to fight, and I don't see why we got to beg these devils, you know, for help when. You know, some of the Negroes, they're going to spend their money on alligator shoes and a Prada bag where they only got a $20 food stamp in it or a flat screen TV and ain't got no electricity. And that money could be put to good use where we could support institutions like yours, man. It's needed, brother. It's really needed. And I appreciate what you're doing, man.
Gratitude.
Thank you for your call, brother.
Yeah, excellent show, brother Elliot.
Thank you, sir. Let's make the rounds again. Let's go to 215 again. 215.
Am I 215?
Yes, sir.
Oh yeah, this is Brother Poindexter. I'd like to ask your guest a question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super excited about what he's doing, and I'd like to know if he has a way of duplicating himself or duplicating his program multi-site. Like maybe Philadelphia would be a wonderful place to duplicate his program.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead, bro.
What would it take to do that?
All right, so I have a checklist that, well, first question, replicable. We can replicate. We're in the process of developing Detroit and the Atlanta school now. So if anyone that's interested in schools, Freedom Home Academy schools to be set up outside of Chicago, I'm going to give my email again that I just gave the previous caller. And there's a checklist. And then I sit down and I go over things with you. We do video conferencing. I go over particulars with you, what it would take to develop that school. And we'll sit down and develop a strategy, you know, if you're interested in that. That email is Freedom Home Academy.
Okay, I have that.
Oh, you got that. Okay, cool. So
you can repeat it for someone else. You can repeat it, though.
Okay, so that's Freedom Home Academy, the number 2@gmail.com. So by sending me an email and you identifying your particular interest, I would tell you exactly, you know, what's needed. Because there's two types. You know, you can do Freedom Home Academy. It actually be ours, and then we'll pay salaries and we'll be responsible for all the setup costs. And then there are satellite schools. So a satellite school is your own personal school. You got a different name, but you're using our curriculum. So that's just two different things that we set up for people. We have maybe like six of those all over the country now that's satellite, that they're using our curriculum and they're operating independently.
And as far as certification, who is certifying you, or should I say
the state? I'm in Chicago. So the state of Illinois, the Board of Ed gives us our license. And depends on what state you're in, you know, you'll go to that particular state. So Pennsylvania will give you a state license to operate.
Not a license. I'm talking about you're like Middle States does for college.
Oh yeah, yeah. You mean accreditation.
Accreditation, yeah, that's the word.
Yeah. That's Middle State, and then we dealing with Central Midwest as well, you know, for accreditation. Yeah. It's like four.
Okay, and a satellite would be accredited locally or accredited by you?
Well, if you're a satellite, you have to accredit you have to go through that whole process yourself. Because a satellite means you're only using my curriculum. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not responsible for, you know, your hiring practices, or I'm not responsible for your infrastructure. You just have a school and you're using our curriculum. That's what a satellite would be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, a couple more, if I have the time.
No, go ahead.
Other question.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, I'm in support of what you do. But I want to know, what are your measurables?
Oh, you mean as far as our reading levels and test scores and things of that nature?
Mm-hmm. Like how do you, you know, what kind of percentiles do you get?
Well, since we you know, you can't test to get in with us, you know, we still use the Iowa tests and we use the Stanford's. Those are the two that we use. And if you want to get more specific, you know, send me an email and then I can go over some stuff with you.
Yeah.
But those are the two that we use. We use the Iowa test and we use the Stanford test.
And do you have a you say you feed her into, is it just HBCUs, or do you feed her into you feed into the Ivy League
Division One? We haven't had any Ivies yet. Close, we've had MIT. We got a student at MIT. We've done Bradley, our student at University of Southern Cal, and the rest is HBCUs. Yeah. Go ahead.
You say you sent this was your own child, so I tread lightly. You sent them. You sent them to school at 16. How did they fare socially?
My son is a, you know, he's not as social. That's just part of his makeup. But I mean, he's all right. You know, he didn't want to go out as much. You know, he didn't want to associate too much with people. But I mean, academic wise, you know, like I mentioned before, you know, he's Dean's List twice. You know, he's an exceptional student. But for the most part, you know, they're social. They do well socially for the most part. You know.
And just no more questions. Just two comments. Are you familiar with Sam Evans? He had a program called AFNA.
I'm not familiar. Where is he out of?
Well, he was out of Philadelphia, but he had a branch in New Orleans, and he was so successful that it was at the level of funding, funders actually set and decided to not fund him anymore because he was too successful, and that's not conjecture. I was actually sitting at the table when this happened.
Okay. Sam Adams.
His name was Sam Evans, Evans, and his program is AFNA, and I think he produced approximately, I know about 19 physicians from his from his program. Followed them from the seventh grade all the way through medical school.
Okay, Sam Evans. Okay, I'm gonna look. Look into him.
Or are you familiar with Vivian Thomas?
No, not familiar with Vivian Thomas.
I'm a Vivian Thomas, should I say, mentee. He has a program, and I'm not sure if it still exists out of Baltimore. They produce in the medical field.
Wasn't he the blue baby doctor, Mr. Poindexter? Brother Poindexter?
Began?
Did he do the blue baby? Come up with the.
Yes. Actually, okay. Yeah.
All right.
He's my academic. Yeah, that guy.
Okay. I'm gonna look into him as well. All right.
And another thing, I noticed that a lot of the students that go to charter schools, when they get to college, they are extremely academically prepared, and they drop off about their sophomore year when they don't have that motivation from the elementary school, and they drop off to pledge fraternity and drink and start having fun, and I wanted to know how to prevent that. My suggestion, and I don't know how valid it is because I had a lot of problems with, especially African, continental African colleagues. My suggestion was to give them, it was time then to give them a guarantee. This is just a theory that I have, that somewhere along the line, that one of the things that our kids don't get is a guarantee. Like, I guarantee you will be successful if you do this, that, and the other. And I say it because they buy the guarantee of the NFL and then the NBA. But the statistics
don't support. Don't support. Yeah, that's right.
I tell them, there's 13 men on a basketball court, but there's 33 men on the floor of a hospital. So is your chances of being a doctor greater than your chances of making the MBA?
That's right.
In a hospital, they have 9 floors. And of those, You work between 33 times 9 opposed to 12 times, what, 12 schemes? I don't know. I never played the game of basketball in my life.
I'm forgetting the brother who wrote the black boy obsolete. I'm forgetting him, but he was out of Chicago too. I forgot his name, but he always says, he gives a poignant example. He says the NBA, it's 200,000 young black boys fighting for 125 jobs, and that's what we're looking at. When every time we turn around, it's a young brother who says he wants to go to the league. So just going back to your statement as far as guarantees, yes, but the guarantee it has to be rooted in culture. So he has to, and we talked about it earlier. How do we solidify the idea that our children, when we teach them, are going to come back and do something productive for us? So what are those guarantees? I mean, if we make it a monetary guarantee, now he's doing it for money? Or is he doing it for love of his people?
So I guess
that kind of I'm not saying your guarantee would be financial, but I mean, if we do make his guarantee financial, that means another cat can come up with more money and he will go with them. So it'll have to be rooted, whatever that guarantee is, it has to be rooted in a genuine love and a genuine analysis of the problems of his people. If you haven't gave him a proper analysis, if you haven't taken him to the grocery store and showed him how that economy leaves extracted from his neighborhood causes dilapidation and property value to diminish his hood. If you haven't explained that to him properly, he doesn't understand. All he wants to do is you say, "Well, cool, I'm gonna give you 25 grand when you graduate and you come back to the neighborhood." So he's gonna take that 25 grand and do something that's gonna benefit the European, not you. So whatever your guarantee is, it could be viable. You know what I'm saying? But I wouldn't make it. Not to say you would, but I wouldn't make it financial. You know, I definitely, if I would give him any guarantee, it'd be a guarantee of giving him $25,000 toward a business, and that business will have to be relative to the needs of our people directly. You know, so
thank you for your
one of my basic beliefs is that a school is should be. Underpinned by the concept that a business comes out of everything you do here.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every class should be a profession, and every teacher that teaches it should be not only excited about that course, but in the teacher's mind, the only course that the kid has taken. If every class is taught like that, and every assignment solves a real problem in our community. Every advisor advises toward not only the community, but putting that kid in the community. Not just, I want you to go down there and fix those people. No,
that's
I want
right.
you to go yeah. and fix yourself with
that's
those
right.
people.
Yeah.
And,
that's right.
And those right. people tend to be us, not anybody else. To me, there's no them. I'm a them.
Yeah, right, right.
Brother,
because we can, like you said, we can be bought out.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your contribution, sir.
Okay.
Peace.
Thanks a lot, brother.
Peace.
Let's go back to Toronto. 647-647? 647, are you there? 647, Toronto? Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to caller. Are you there? Caller, let's put them back on hold. Brother Marcus, okay.
Well, before we, one thing with this, everybody's in home right now. Do the school have to make a transition now because of?
We did.
And is that something new? And how are y'all faring in making this transition to digital or virtual?
Man, that's it. Man, you know what? I always say, you know, the universe, it gives me warning shots. It warns me. It warns me until something drastic happens, and I don't listen till it's too late. I've been told to create this online program for the last 2 years. They've been telling me, do it, do it, do it. Now I've been forced to do it within the last 2.5 weeks. So I think I'm on the cusp. I'm on the periphery now of being complete. We've been doing Zoom classes for the last, 3 weeks? No, this month, tomorrow will be 3 weeks. So we've been forced to move into virtual classes, which is good because, you know, we needed to take that next step anyway. So by June, we'll be full blown. We've the governor has told us that school is going to be out for the entire year, which is beneficial to us because we're going to go virtual. That means, you know, we can add a different revenue stream to the classes now since they're going to be online. So yes, to answer your question, we've had major adjustments. My son was just helping me develop, you know, the whole thing right before I got on this call. So it's working out well. I know there's some parents that don't feel good about paying tuition. But I still got to pay rent on my building and pay the bills and whatnot. So, yeah. But, yeah, we've made some adjustments, you know. It's working out pretty well so far.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So, Brother Marcus, if anybody here in the Philadelphia area, Tri-State area, is interested in starting a school, maybe in their basement like you started, or they have a building or whatever, if they want to use your charter, so to speak, or come under your banner, they can reach you at freedomhomeacademy2@gmail.com.
Yeah, they can email me.
Okay.
They can go to the website, FHAIENTL, that's freedomhomeacademyinternational.org.
Okay.
And like I said before, we have a program that we help and assist from start to finish. Those brothers and sisters who are interested in school development, from paperwork all the way up to, you know, marketing, getting their first children in the doors.
Okay.
We'll do all that. There's packages that we have, you know, to get them ready and up and moving.
Okay.
So they can send me an email and I can get them online.
And any brothers that's interested, I call the brother here in Philadelphia that's interested in some remedial classes or classes to kind of strengthen some skills.
Absolutely.
He can reach out to you.
Look, y'all, I'll be there with those 3-year-olds. I'm telling you. You're gonna have to take me, and then I got to deal with my embarrassment. Like, you know, I'm looking at my excitement of watching them, but I'm like, how you do that? You know, what you doing, OG?
I told one of my parents yesterday. She called me and she say, how much you going to charge me to get in that business law class? My business law class, we thorough in that. I got brothers and sisters, them little brothers and sisters, and they'll be so sharp on that business law. So she said, I'm looking at my son's homework. I was studying this. I think she said she was going to real estate school or something. We'd be dealing with contracts. She said, I'm studying this right now. Get my real estate license. How can I sit in? And I got some third and fourth graders in there. Like, killing them. So I said, you can get in. We're going to do that at 4:00. You can get in. So, yeah, I mean, you know, don't be ashamed, brother, because a lot of this stuff, I didn't study when I was in school. As long as I'm prepared, if I get 3 days to prepare, I can teach anything.
I just
need 3 days. I can get in front of, I can sit down and focus. Give me 3 days. I'm ready to teach it. And that's just how, that's my approach for all my courses. If it's something I want to teach them, I just get prepared with the information. And I just go out and teach it.
Okay.
You know? So, but yeah.
Brother Marcus, hey, listen, thank you for spending some time with us, man, to let us know about what's going on at the Freedom Home Academy International, to talk about our children. And I encourage anybody if they don't write you, support the school. If you're not interested in starting one at your home or at your church or at your mosque or wherever, at your garage, right. then support mm-hmm. the school. This is our yeah. valuable resource, Brother Richard, and it, right. and it needs right. to be cultivated and supported.
That's right.
And the door is open for you to come on anytime you want, brother, to give us little updates on things, any information you want to share. The door is open. Finally, we got the door open, so it's going to stay open for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You and Brother Rich, y'all been great hosts, man. You know, usually, you know, I'm on these shows, man, and the hosts talk all the time. I can't even get a word in.
No, we don't do that. Because the folks we have on here are doing things. So we want the people to hear exactly what they're doing.
I appreciate it, man. Stay strong, brothers. And if there's anything I can do, promote your show in Chicago. Just promote it on my pages, any of my platforms. Send me. You know what? I never got the advert, too. Were you able to send it?
Wait a minute. Say that again.
I never got the advert.
Yeah, I sent it. I sent it.
You did?
It might have went to your spam or whatever, but yeah, I sent it.
Okay, I'm going to check again. And if there's anything else I can do, you know, on my end to support the show, just let me know. I'll be happy to do it.
We'll talk.
I appreciate what y'all are doing, too.
We'll talk soon.
All right, brother.
Thank you, bro. All right.
You now.
Peace.
As you say, stay sharp.
Stay sharp. Stay chiseled.
Stay chiseled. Yeah, I like that.
All right, then.
All right. Right. Richard, man, I loved it tonight. Interesting conversation, and the brothers working, man, with mm-hmm. our most precious resources. And I encourage all the listening audience, if you got time, and we all sheltered in place, go to YouTube, look at some of the videos of those children, and hear them, hear their knowledge at such a young age. You know, it's hard to believe, Richard. Mm. Because we go ahead, finish
it up. You know, the other part with that is that as he spoke earlier, and it's like really important to understand that this ain't from no upper middle income families that these children are coming from, right? These are women or men and women who are, you know, struggling in there. All right, and that's why he has to do that survey. So the point of that, these our children, our natural resource can be cultivated to produce, as they say, is diamonds in those fields, you know. And I think that's really so important, because it makes it seem like they got to be of a certain social background, or they have to be naturally talented. And here he's showing that they are. All our children are naturally talented. You just have to be able to know how to bring out the best in them. And they'll be willing to do it.
Yeah, these children, man, listen, anybody when the program is off, go to YouTube and look at some of those clips. You'll mm-hmm. be amazed to see the knowledge level of some of those children.
And they're doing their anatomy and
they're so excited to answer questions, Richard.
Oh, right.
I mean, I got the answer. Wow.
But we also, Elliot, and it was one thing, you know, and we was talking about it earlier, that I think that. And that's why I'm really adamant in framing this. And I think that we have to understand it, because, you know, Azariah Iharom and his whole thing of the sovereign psyche, mm-hmm. we have to think from a sovereign. No, we may not be doing what he's doing, but if we're thinking from a sovereign perspective, then we will communicate and analyze things from a sovereign. So the thinking from a sovereign, that's why we have to contextualize. This is a natural resource that we have, which has, you know, strategic value. Therefore, you know, all the time I always hear, you know, the president or somebody say, we have to protect our national interests. Well, aren't these children our national interests? I mean, and that means they're willing to go into other countries to topple them,
to protect their national interests. Shouldn't be we will be willing to do the same to protect our national interests when that is the only natural resource that we have? We don't have no land. We ain't got no money.
Yeah,
that's a way of thinking.
We got
right?
we got those minds, but and they're very valuable.
Right. And we got a process that works. I mean, but we have to scale it up. You know, like anything else, is that, you know, what he's showing us, that these here schools and we have done it before, but they have to be scaled up, and they have to be scaled up in relationship to the environment we're in and the history that we come out of. He gave a good example. What, the Rockefeller Foundation comes down there and set up the HBCUs, meaning that these were shacks. Those were shacks that were turned into school. Some of they didn't even have desks. And they raised the literacy rate.
Yeah, you see what was coming out of those shacks, though. Mm-hmm. And they seen what was coming out of those shacks.
Which goes to why we need, when we're thinking at strategically, we need to use that in one of those analyses. You know, I was mentioning to you before, that SWOT analysis. What is the strength of having an institution like this academy? What is the weakness? But, you know, the other two is, it says opportunities or threat. But I think that we should, who would be our opposition? Because there is some people, and the caller Poindexter brought out with the gave another example with Sam Evans. And Sam Evans, not only did he have that educational system, but, you know, at one point, Ellie, the Wilson Good and whatever, every year he had a event where he brought all of those political people together because they were supposed to network with each other. And he would say, you know, they come and eat my good beef and go home. But he was trying to create a power base out of those relationships. But it's so the opposition, we have to be really, really conscientious for. And we can't say, well, what the white man going to do? Because that could be an but even within us, there are people who could be an opposition for the growth of this kind of enterprise, the development of our African mind, development of our African self.
It's sad to
even
say.
Even within our group.
It's sad to say, but you're absolutely right. It's sad to say, but that can't stop us.
Right.
We got to keep moving forward.
And we have to prepare for it to come.
Yeah.
And not, you know, not let it just, you know, like, okay, it's going to let it happen and then say, I knew it was. Well, if we knew, we should have had something in place, because then that's the lives of those children. That's the lives of our future that's at stake.
Yeah, well, the struggle continues, Richard. I want to let everybody know the lineup. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Oshi from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Always interesting dialogue and conversation on African Perspectives with Brother Oshi. Again, that's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on that evening, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening Media. Every first and third Monday, Conversation Reparations and Cobra's program from 9 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank on Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. Mondays through Fridays from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Warren Ballantyne's podcast on Time for an Awakening Media. And on Fridays, Time for an Awakening is back from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. And also, just to mark your calendars, and I don't have a calendar in front of me. I'm talking about mark your calendars. Let me do it right now while we're talking. The 27th of April is the reboot of Black People's Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3 on Time for an Awakening Media. And that's Mondays and Wednesdays, the 27th and the 29th of this month is the reboot of Black People's Matrix. And on the 26th is the debut of Black Reality Think Tank Part 2, I would assume. Mm-hmm. I got to get the name of the program. And the sisters will be on in the afternoon, I think 4 to 6 on Saturdays on Time for Unawakening Media. Again, I want to thank everybody for participating in the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. Oh, I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of.
To save the children.